This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look of last week's stories. I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Joey Delahunty. Today, we will be discussing University Housing, a new film series from Normal Theater, Heartland Community College's annual Fundraiser event, and hearing an update on ISU basketball. ISU admitted its largest freshman class ever last semester, and with all those new students, housing has become an issue. Even on a national scale, many people talk of a housing crisis. I sat down with Hillary Campos from University Housing Services to learn more about how they've been dealing with the inflow.
So, just to get started, this past fall, ISU had its, I believe, largest incoming freshman class ever. Has that caused any problems for housing?
I wouldn't call them problems, to be honest. I would just say, obviously, it was in the news that we were utilizing temporary lounges, but I will say our lounges, obviously, they were temporarily used for overflow housing at the start of the fall 2024 semester. They were actually fully vacated by mid-semester last semester, so every student placed in a lounge was successfully relocated to permanent housing within our residence halls. We even now are able to provide flexibility for emergency relocations if needed. Utilizing lounge spaces as temporary housing is a common practice seen across universities across the nation and in higher education.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
On a sort of separate note, there's been the talk of the new residence hall project. Is that still underway and how's it going?
Yeah, so our president recently stated, I believe it was last semester, but while that new residence hall construction is not moving forward at this time, we are actively exploring alternative solutions, one of them being certified housing. That remains a viable option. The university continues to assess available properties for potential acquisition. We do also continue to work with our campus partners and what have you, yeah.
Can you tell me about certified housing? How would that work?
Yeah, so essentially, we've seen universities doing it across the nation, very close to home, even to being U of I, being a university that does this practice. Essentially, it is housing that is certified for the university. I would say it's very close, in layman's terms, very close to what we have on, like, certifying, like, the university, while it's not, like, it's not going to become a residence hall per se. It's still considered campus living, certified by us, like a thumbs up, but at the same time, it might be seen on like our off-campus housing database. You know, the Dean of Students provides like an off-campus housing database for students who are not living on campus, obviously. It would be something similar to that. So those solutions, like I said, are still being looked at. They are still continuing to assess those possibilities there.
Do you have any insight into why the university has decided against the new residence hall project?
I'm sure you've heard and seen everything regarding budget, regarding just the state that the whole nation is in right now. I think it is safe to say that it does have to do with just the times that we're living in, just the economy, but at the same time, yeah, I would just say, like, it's very, very out in the open that the budget is seen as a potential hurdle right now for a lot of different, not only higher education, but everywhere, right?
That's sort of all the questions I have for you. Any other large projects or maintenance or renovation stuff that y'all got going on right now?
Maintenance, I mean, a lot of our big projects for our facilities do take place over the summer when our students are not in the halls. That just gives us enough time and the work that's needed. We want to make sure that we're not disturbing the students during the fall and spring semester. So typically we do have a lot of large facilities projects happening to keep our halls and spaces ready, clean, safe, obviously. That is usually in the summer months. But yeah, we do always have a good large amount of projects happening to keep our spaces safe and clean and what have you.
Anything else you'd want to add for the record? That's all I got for you.
I just want to say, too, we obviously do recognize that there is an ongoing demand for housing, and we are still actively collaborating with our campus partners, and we are well aware that this is a concern of students, and we're hearing those voices. And, yeah, we're doing everything we can and everything within our power to make sure that we are providing resources and providing as much as we can to students at this time.
The new dorms were originally announced in preparation for the new College of Engineering that's being developed. But perhaps certified housing will solve the same problem.
The Normal Theater is developing two new film series throughout the next few months. The first is to honor Black History Month, and the second is about the LGBTQ community. The theater is partnering with the ISU's African American Studies Program and the Queer Coalition to provide for educational resources. Caitlin Wittes of the Newsroom talked with Adam Fox from the Civic Arts Manager from the Normal Theater and discussed what the audience should expect in these new series.
So my first question for you is, when is this event taking place throughout the month?
The Black History Month series, I believe the second film was actually on Monday, if I'm not mistaken. So I know that stage reading of For Colored Girls is happening not next Monday, but the Monday after the 24th, I believe is the date on that. And then the In Her Image series is happening throughout February and March. Those dates are, I think, every other Wednesday. But yeah, so it's happening throughout February and March between the Black History Month series. That one, actually, there were three entries in it. Two of them have already happened. It's just kind of got picked up late. I shouldn't say late, but it just kind of got picked up midstream by people that were looking for stuff and said, oh, wow, it's already going on. The In Her Image series, which is about queer female filmmakers, that is starting up again in a couple of weeks.
So what films were shown or readings or what will be shown? What are just some of those?
We partnered with a couple of different agencies on campus, a couple different entities on campus. African American Studies was the one that is hosting the Black History Month series. And then the In Her Image series is happening with the Queer Coalition, LGBTQIA plus affinity groups. They're the ones that are kind of making that all happen together as well. So it's going to be a good series or a good couple of series that are happening for everything. So again, African American Studies program is who we're partnering with on the Black History Month films. In Her Image is the series that's happening with Queer Coalition, which is the LGBTQIA plus affinity group, and then we're partnering with them on working on those. For the Black History Month film series, on the 3rd, we showed the documentary 1 Million Experiments, which is an amazing film. On the 10th, so just this past Monday, we showed the documentary I Am Not Your Negro, which is about James Baldwin, who is an incredible activist and just never had any problem speaking truth to power. That was a really, really remarkable night. We had NAACP Youth Council out there with us. It was a wonderful event. The film had just a packed house and some really, really great conversation. Again, Mr. Baldwin was somebody who never had any problem speaking his mind, and he had an awful lot to say that is very, very relevant, especially now, I should say. And then again, the stage reading for Colored Girls will be taking place on the 24th, so not this Monday, but next Monday. That's going to be a really cool, not just a film series, but actually a multimedia series that we're doing with that happening, and we're excited to be able to have that up on stage. February 18th, we're going to be starting up In Her Image series. There's a documentary called Dykes, Camera, Action, which we're excited to have premiering for that. It came out back in 2018, and it's looking at the history of lesbian cinema from the 1970s through modern day. There will be conversation following this, as we've had for the Black History film series. There will be post-show discussions that are happening. Dr. Liv Stone from Sociology and Anthropology, who's curated a lot of films with us at the theater, will be leading that talk back on the 18th. And then again, as we move forward through March, and then again, a little bit further on, we have a few more films that are going to be coming up that we're really excited about that are all part of that series. And again, I'll send that over. Lingua Franca is one of them that we're showing on March 5th. And then on March 19th, the great film Lyle will be showing. So some really, really good films, not all documentaries. Lyle's actually a really crazy thriller that came out maybe about 10 years ago. So a lot of fun stuff that's going on, and again, some great discussion that's going to be happening. Again, Dr. Stone, Dr. Eric Wesselman will be involved from Department of Psychology, who is a good friend of the theater as well. So some good partnering is happening really across units on campus. I mean, getting some great engagement from both the campus community as well as the community at large.
All right, perfect. And what is the significance of these series?
Well, I mean, I guess the significance is just the chance to be able to show films that were maybe not as well known for mainstream viewers, but does give us a chance to be able to expose them to an audience, again, made up of those coming from campus as well as those from the larger Bloomington Normal community. And not just the chance to be able to show those films and make sure that we're showcasing those things that haven't necessarily gotten screen time elsewhere, but also to have really good, deep conversations related to the films. These are films that do present some challenging ideas sometimes. They are some things that maybe are asking us to question the status quo. And when we can all sit together and think about that, think through that together, look at the world through a different lens, I think that's a really important thing that we can do. That's the significance. It provides a little more context for our world and helps us see things through maybe a different set of eyes.
Sure. And then just to expand on that, why are these messages in the series and the film so important to relay to the community?
I don't think right now it's too much of a stretch to say it's important to be having conversations that are amplifying marginalized voices. I think that the current tenor that we have surrounding a lot of policy, it's important to make sure that we are still centering those voices and providing a platform where we can see those experiences, immerse ourselves in those stories, and make sure that we're experiencing just a little bit of empathy and having a little bit of education surrounding these films. So I think that, yeah, that's the importance of why doing these series right now. That said, these series were not a response to anything. We didn't decide to do these because of any sort of dialogue that was happening on a national level. We partner with organizations from Illinois State University all the time. We have so many different partnerships going on year-round. They're really vital to what we do with the Normal Theater. It's really important for our mission that we have these partnerships. So this is something that's been in the works since prior to fall semester. I think last summer, maybe even last spring, we started talking about some of this coming up and putting all of this together. So this is part of just our mission, which is to, again, provide space and amplify voices whenever we can. So that's what these series are about. That's why we're doing them.
Sure. And then what actually inspired the series? How did the idea come about?
So we were approached. We have, again, great partnerships with the university. We have great faculty members that we work with all the time from different departments, different units on campus who come to us with ideas, come to us with series proposals. Sometimes they're curricular outcomes. Sometimes they're just things that they think are important to be able to share because it deals with their research, deals with what they think their students are going to be most impacted by positively. So in this case, African American Studies approached us about doing the Black History film series. It seemed like it was a logical thing to approach in Black History Month, just as a target date as we were launching this inaugural one. And we decided on three dates because that's just what made sense as far as capacity, as we were putting together discussions, as we were looking at the programming and curating everything. But we were really fortunate that the African American Studies program approached us about doing this. Likewise, the In Her Image series was an outcome of the affinity group and the faculty that we've worked with, who said that this would be a good time to be able to do that. And again, they approached us saying this is a series that we think would really resonate strongly with a lot of people on campus and that it's a lot of stories that we would love to share at this time. And because they did some great curatorial work looking at the film titles, putting together some of that additional support material to provide more context, and again, facilitating those discussions for everybody, we are always happy to be able to entertain these kinds of things. So we're very fortunate to have partners that come up with these ideas and really think deeply about how can we show these films that will resonate on a lot of levels and how can we make sure that it's more than just the film shows at 7, we'll see you there, okay, cool, thanks for coming, but make a full evening out of it that immerses everybody a little bit deeper and provides some of those experiences even before you come to the theater to contextualize things and get you in the right headspace and give you a little bit of the history so that you're walking in ready for the film and ready to experience what it is.
The next expected show, called I'm Not Your Negro, will be shown on March 10th at 6:30 p.m. in the theater. The show pays support to the National Association for the Advancement of for Colored People, or NCAACA for short. We're going to take a quick break here on a Second Look, but we've got some great stories you don't want to miss. Keep it here on 103.3 WZND.
News now on 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it so far, we've talked about University Housing's latest problems and a new film series from the Normal Theater.
Heartland Community College is holding their annual Funnyraiser, a comedy-based fundraiser featuring local amateur comedies, a cash bar, and a silent auction. WZND's Aldi Cooper went and talked to Heartland's assistant president Steve Fast about the event.
So I was wondering why this event is important to you and what you stand for in scholarships and what raising money means to you and to Heartland Community College.
Well, we are fortunate at the college to have a robust arm of fundraising. This is the Heartland Community College Foundation, and that is an organization that has helped countless students throughout the years, especially with assistance for scholarships and also for programs that support student learning. And they do a number of things throughout the year to try to engage the public and let people know not only about the college and what we do, but how people can help our students. And this fundraiser is an event that has been going on now for 11 years. This will be 11th annual fundraiser stand-up comedy night, and it's one of the most popular events as far as attendance goes because people like to come out and laugh and feel good while they're laughing, but also feel good that they are helping raise money that supports key programs and our students themselves.
Awesome. So you said this is the 11th annual. That's so cool. How did you guys come up with the idea of doing a fundraiser? I think that's brilliant.
Well, the idea certainly predates me, but it goes back to the foundation staff, which is led by the executive director, Chris Downing, and the folks that have worked with him throughout the years. And I don't really know where the idea came about, but it was a unique one in trying to find local folks who this isn't their job. It's not even their primary hobby, but they've always wanted to give it a go. Maybe they've been on stage a few times before. In the instance of our host, who's done it now for, I believe, 7 years straight, Joe Strupek, he has, you know, done stand-up comedy sort of as a hobby here and there, and it gives people an opportunity to, you know, contribute a little bit risky to get on stage and see if you can get some laughs. So everybody knows that person that they work with or that they know or in their family that they think is pretty funny, and it's their opportunity to get out and prove that they're funny to people other than beyond just their friends or coworkers. And their friends and coworkers show up, and maybe some people hit it out of the park. Other times people, you know, have a learning experience, but it's been something that has been very unique, and we've had returning comedians that have liked it so much, and they've just gotten better every time.
And then one more question. How much money do you usually raise at this event, and how many people normally attend?
Usually we have a couple of hundred people at the event attending. I don't know what the dollars raised were last year. I'd have to look up and follow up with you on that. That's something that the foundation has. The foundation is a sort of a separate entity from the college. They are a nonprofit entity, and I don't have access to the specific amount that they got from the fundraiser last year. Something I would want to add is that the money actually goes towards a couple of different things, individual scholarships for students, but also something called the Student Emergency Fund, which is a fund that they have on hand in case a student encounters a hardship to the point where they might have to drop out of school. That's something that was established during COVID times, and we've seen that it has been needed since then. And also it supports an evening child care program we have called Nighthawks, which allows for students that demonstrate a need to be able to have their kids, you know, have a little daycare type situation happening, but at night as they attend night classes. So those are some of the programs that they're raising money for.
The event is set for February 28th at 7 p.m. in Heartland's Astroth Community Education Center.
ISU's University Galleries is holding its 6th annual Image of Research competition. There are 20 finalists this year, all ISU students, presenting photos related to their research. All of the finalists will be shown in an exhibition at the galleries, and the first place winner will be awarded $200.
McLean County will soon be voting on a countrywide 1% sales tax in the April 1st election. If passed, the tax would go implementing schools and mental health services in the country. The tax is estimated to generate around $30 million for schools in the area.
On Thursday, ISU's tenure and tenure-track professors union filed an official complaint against the university for not negotiating in good faith with the union. The union is newer on campus, only having existed for the past year or so, and are still working on negotiating their new contract.
Both Marisi Drive and Front Street in Bloomington are closed through to traffic today due to main water breaks. The Public Works Department is out working on fixing them as we speak, and the roads are expected to reopen later today.
ISU sports were back in action this week. The men's tennis team lost both matches in last week's doubleheader against New Mexico State and Tulsa. The Redbirds fell one doubles match shy of a victory, which resulted in a 4-3 win for the Aggies. In the second match of the day, the Redbirds were defeated by the Golden Hurricanes, 5-2. Then, in yesterday's match, the Redbirds were shut out by Northwestern University. The Redbirds will hit the courts today, playing Northern Michigan.
The softball team went winless in the Puerto Vallarta Challenge in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. The Redbirds suffered shutouts to both BYU and Florida International to open the Invitational. To conclude their time in Mexico, the Redbirds came up short 4-3 against Indiana University, and they were shut out again by North Dakota State by 3 runs. Next week, the team faces against Indiana State.
The baseball team kicked off its 2025 season at Western Kentucky and still looks for its wins of the season. In the game one of the series, the Redbirds were unable to stop the hot Hilltoppers bat and fell 9-7. The following game, the Hilltoppers remained on top, winning 4-3. The remainder of the series was canceled due to weather conditions.
On Friday, the gymnastics team took down Greenville University to win their 12th win of the season. Jolly Jones was the top competitor on beam and finished with a score of 9.825. Next week, the Redbirds duel against Illinois University and Washington University.
The women's basketball team suffered its biggest loss of the season last Sunday against Northern Iowa, 72-52. Nevaeh Thomas was the only Redbird to reach double digits with 13 points. The Redbirds got back in the win column in Friday's contest against Indiana State. It was an offensive performance from the team as 5 Redbirds scored in double digits. Shannon Dowell led the team with 19 points in the 85-77 win to chop down the Sycamores.
Speaking of basketball, ISU men's basketball hosted Drake University on Wednesday night, where the Redbirds fell 84-77. Despite Chase Walker's 25 points, Johnny Kinziger's 22, and 10 off the bench from Ty Pence, the Redbirds were unable to keep up with the hot-handed Bulldogs. The team shot 40% from the three-point line and only 66 behind the free-throw line. WZND's Julian Voss attended the post-game press conference and talked with head coach Ryan Peden on the team's performance.
You got to start the conversation with giving them credit. And tonight is one of those nights. I give them credit. That's a really good team, 23-2 for a reason. For anybody to beat them, you got to bring your A game. And I didn't feel like that was our A game tonight. And they were a big reason to do with that. So I start and finish by giving them credit. We got to be better. I think first half, our turnovers, you know, they were pressuring the ball, I would say, considerably more than they did at their place a few weeks ago. And we didn't really respond very well to that, uncharacteristically, turning the ball over. And Johnny getting in foul trouble, that hurt us. Yeah, that hurt us because it became a real, you know, ball handlers, guards type of game. And, you know, Johnny's one of our best in that area, you know, so that didn't help, but that wasn't everything. So that's we just got to be better. Yeah, give him credit.
Coach, it seemed like in this game, a lot of your problems happened at the free throw line. So how, at this point in the season, do you get your team to lock in as such an important part of the game?
We're a really, you know, generally speaking, a really good free throw shooting team. I felt like we left a lot of meat on the bone there tonight. We missed front ends. We missed free throws we normally don't miss. Felt like there were 6, 8, 10 points out there that we didn't cash in on. And you play a team of this caliber, really good team. You got to cash in. You don't have to be perfect, but you got to cash in when you have opportunities. And that was one of the areas that I felt was uncharacteristic tonight of us. But, you know, you have nights like that over the course of a long season. We're going to have a couple, and tonight, unfortunately, was one of those for us, yeah.
Do you feel like there's any defensive adjustments you could have made towards the end of the game to try to inch right back into it?
Yeah, I think they're trying to trap or press. There's a lot of good qualities about Drake. I'd say the very top for me would be, I think they're a tremendous passing team, 1 through 5, tremendous. So yeah, you're taking some chances to open a game, open the floor up when you do that. Now late, We were trying to do that. I don't know that I was willing to do that with 5, 6, 7 minutes to go because I felt like we were in a three-possession game. And if we could dig in and get some stops, our offense was humming. You know, we were second half offensively 63% from the field. Like, we were humming. So some of our ball pressure, I think, could have probably been better, and our execution of some ball screens could have been better. But they also hit some shots now. 22 hit some. He hit some backbreakers, end of shot clock, extra deep, driving kick, late clock. It seemed like they hit a lot of the really timely shots. Like I said, give them credit.
The Redbirds' losing streak falls to 3 following the 84-77 loss to Indiana State in yesterday's contest. Walker led the Redbirds once again with 22 points. Kinziger was right behind him with 21 on 4 of 9 shooting behind the arc. The Redbirds' record sits at 7-9 in the Missouri Valley Conference, and they will be back in action on Wednesday at 7 p.m. against their I-74 rivals, the Bradley Braves.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we talked about the housing problems facing ISU, the Normal Theater's new film series, Heartland's upcoming comedy fundraiser event, and heard from Coach Peden about Redbird basketball. For Second Look, I'm Joey Delahunty.
And I'm Jaden Cohn. And you can listen to this episode or any of our previous ones on WZND.com under the podcast tab. And make sure you tune in next week to hear from the Bird's Eye View team about the decline of higher education. It is hosted by Lauren Leisure, Colleen Holden, and Bella Amarillo. Have a great week, everyone, and we will see you in 2 weeks from now from our first episode of March for Second Look.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.